From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
While the media shows a constant game of tag being played between the Trump and Biden camps for this year's election, there are others in the running for president this year as well. One such candidate was selected this past weekend, Howie Hawkins, who will be the presidential candidate for the Green Party this year. The Greens held an online convention this past weekend and selected Hawkins as their presidential candidate and Angela Walker as their vice presidential candidate. The two addressed supporters online on Saturday, and they were introduced by Gloria Matera, who's been a member of the Green Party since 2001 and is now a member of the Green Party U.S. Steering Committee. She's also co-chair of the Green Party of New York and ran in 2010 with Howie Hawkins in his first Green Party candidacy for governor of New York. That campaign put the Green Party back on the ballot in New York State with 60,000 votes. This is Gloria Matera introducing Green Party vice presidential candidate Angela Walker.
Angela Walker describes herself as a Fred Hampton, a Satu Shakur socialist. She was born and raised in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, to a working class Black family. She learned early that though money was necessary to live in the society, it was less important than integrity, cooperation, and dignity. This upbringing shaped the activist and organizer she later became. Angela attended Bayview High School in Milwaukee, graduating in 1992. She and a group of Black students petitioned for and received an African-American history class at their predominantly white school. Angela became a member of the Army Reserve in August 1992 and began classes at the Milwaukee Area Technical College in 1993. After the birth of her daughter in late 1993, Angela and her daughter, Epiphany, relocated to Jacksonville, Florida. While living in Florida, Angela attended the University of North Florida. She began as an education major with the intention of becoming a special education teacher. She decided later to change her major to history, a subject that she remains passionate about today. The need for extra income in college led Angela to take a job driving a school bus in 2001, and she left college to drive full time because she loved the work. The first mass mobilization Angela attended was during the demand for a recount of ballots in the 2000 Florida election, and how we remember that time. She joined a contingent of people who traveled to Tallahassee, Florida to protest widespread discrepancies with the ballots in the election. That experience marked the first of many protests she would attend and illustrated the power of people coming together to stand up for their rights. In subsequent years, Angela would participate in actions against the war in Iraq in New York and Washington, D.C., while a driver for Greyhound Lines. In 2009, she returned to her home city and began work with the Milwaukee County Transit System. In 2011, newly elected Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker launched an attack on unions from the state capitol, Madison. And I remember many, many Greens, I think, that are here today or watching today or delegates today were there at that Capitol, along with Angela. Thousands of union workers and their supporters occupied the Capitol building and grounds in protest. Angela, a member of the Amalgamated Transit Union, Local 998, was among the protesters. As a result of her involvement in the protests, the then president of her union local appointed her legislative director for the local. Angela went on to work for the Wisconsin Jobs Now in 2015 as community campaigns coordinator for the organization. Her work focused primarily on resistance to the privatization of public schools in Milwaukee. During her time with the organization, she approached by Emidio Mimi Saltlitz of the Socialist Party USA about running for vice president of the United States. She agreed to be Mimi's running mate for the 2016 election. Despite the Socialist Party USA's limited ballot access on the continental United States, the ticket did well in Guam, garnering 4% of the vote there. When Wisconsin's Jobs for Now folded in late 2016, Angela moved to South Carolina to regroup and reconsider her relationship with activism and politics. Initially, on arrival in South Carolina, Angela worked as a substitute teacher at the secondary education level. During the summer break of 2017, she began work as a dump truck driver and continues that work presently. When Green Party presidential candidate Howie Hawkins asked her about his being his running mate for 2020 presidential election, Angela stated, How could I say no? Angela Walker is the mother of one and the grandmother of five. She's a fierce advocate for the rights of Black, Brown, and Indigenous people, the LGBTQI community, labor, and the earth itself. I'm going to pause now to find out how we're doing on our last vote of the day, virtual show of hands to approve Angela Walker as our vice presidential nominee. We have a clear majority of approval with 222 virtual hands with 221 approval. So Angela Walker is approved as our vice presidential nominee. We're hoping Angela is in the house to be able to say a few words. Just checking that. Great. Angela Walker, our vice presidential nominee.
Hey, everybody. I am a tiny bit overwhelmed. This is absolutely massive. Greetings to everybody. I am coming to you from PD land. This land originally belonged to the PD Nation here in South Carolina. I am in Florence. And as I said, family, this is a massive, massive, massive thing that just happened. I want to first off thank all of you delegates who stood with Howie and I and cast your votes for us. It's not a small thing. And we thank you. And I personally thank you for your trust. And Howie's probably going to reiterate that. And your support of a platform that I want you to know that I support with my whole soul. I also want to say thank you to the Socialist Party of the USA for helping to make the red-green alliance that we talked of so many years ago. We're now seeing it. It's pretty amazing. I want to thank our brilliant campaign manager, La Jefa herself, Andrea Merida. And I want to thank my wonderful assistant, Ashley Frame. And huge, huge, huge thank yous, huge big ups to all of our folks on our campaign team. Y'all are brilliant. You are amazing. Y'all are hustlers. Thank y'all for making, you know, doing all that you have done so that this campaign has gotten to this point. I want to thank all of you who have showed up for us in various different ways, whether it was supporting with money, whether it was kind words and good thoughts. Thank you to the volunteers that have made this campaign made this campaign the topic of conversation in spaces where it wasn't happening. I want to thank Sherry Honkala and Ajamu Baraka, who have stood where I am standing right now. And I thank you both for reaching out and sharing your wisdom and your support with me. I want to thank all of you with whom I have shared the struggle since the Occupy days, since the Wisconsin Uprising days, since the Milwaukee Uprising days back in 2016. Big love to all of you who are still in the streets all around the country. And I want to say thank you to my homie, Mimi Soltysik, who is now a guardian angel of all of us who are fighting the good fight. And honor to my late friend and lifelong socialist, Rick Cassell. Thank you to my running mate, Howie Hawkins, who has very quickly become one of my favorite humans. And I have to say thank you to Source, to my ancestors whose names I know, those whose names I don't know. I want to thank my coven. I want to thank my family for being the place that I began to learn everything that I needed to know for this fight. My hope and intention is that my grandchildren will know a world where the struggles that we are currently working against are no longer an issue. Dying, my friends dying. I am literally fighting for people's lives. Bare minimum, not risking death. Can I have that? And that is a direct quote from my homie Lark on a Facebook post that I shared about what we're going to need to do about, you know, addressing public education this year. And what she said not only brought home for me the absurdity of asking educators, students, and families to be sacrificial victims to the coronavirus, her statement reminded me how immense this campaign's implications really are. Family, this country needs us. It needs us now. And I know y'all have been hearing this all day today, and I am adding my voice to one, you know, one more in the number. This country needs us. That is the thing that I want to rededicate us today as a party, that our people need us. In 2016, I walked away from politics, moved to a new state, and set about doing the work to reconstruct myself. All of my brujas, my witches will know what I'm talking about when I'm speaking about shadow work. Sitting with the parts of you that aren't the shiny, pretty, photo op and quotable parts. The parts that need healing, that are a part of your whole. And in 2020, having received a call from Howie Hawkins about being his presidential running mate, all I could do was look at my ancestor altar and go, really, y'all? Really? I've been prepared for this moment. I am ready for it. And after weeks of stewing in a rage about this government's criminal mishandling of the coronavirus pandemic, the universe gave me a good, healthy shove. Do something. Show up. Who are you if you refuse? I couldn't imagine being given a platform to advance healing on a large scale for our folks and for this country and saying no because I didn't want to leave the comfort of my isolated life. All of you are here for a reason. You're here because you know that healthcare is a human right. You're here because you know that ending US imperialism is the way to heal this country and the harm that it has inflicted on Black and Brown countries around this world. You're here because you know that this glorious planet we share deserves our care and good stewardship, and that capitalist exploitation of her resources is killing us. You are here because you know that the unsustainable and inequality-driven way that this country is run has to end. That both people and the earth deserve more and vastly better than the capitalist dystopia we are being herded towards. People may not have been ready for our message in 2012. They may not have been ready for our message in 2016. But now, in a time when so much has been stripped away by the coronavirus pandemic, by the exposure of continued state violence against Black, Indigenous, and Brown people, it has nowhere to hide. This country is being forced to confront its shadows and what has been hiding in those shadows, working to be seen, waiting to be acknowledged, waiting to be healed. In this time of impossible things, the Green Party is ready for the people, and the people are ready for the Green Party. They are ready for our message of solidarity, justice, true democracy, economic opportunity for all, and respect for diversity, all rooted in love. They are ready for an eco-socialist Green New Deal. They are ready to know that we came to take the White House. And yes, I said that. We came to take the White House. This is not a cosmetic run. We're not running to prove a point. We are running to flip the government. Because it's that massive, because it's that urgent. We are here to move the cash bloated, ineffective parties of the ruling class aside because it is time for the people to be able to breathe. We are not asking for the right to safe housing, a guaranteed income above poverty for all, and Medicare for all. We are demanding these things. We are not afraid to call the duopoly on its arrogance and incompetence and move it aside. This is our time. No one else is bringing the deep systemic changes that we are proposing. We will not be pacified with performative reforms. The system must be overhauled, and the Green Party is the only party to do that. Within our own ranks, we will have to be intentional. Our chapters must be welcoming and flourishing spaces for our family with disabilities, our LGBTQIA, non-binary, and gender non-conforming family, our working class family, our immigrant family, Black, Indigenous, Brown family. We don't need to and are not going to agree on every point, but where do our objectives intersect? How do we strengthen our party and also the communities who need us so much? How do we create the world we envision? One without prisons, one with open borders, with the US being the world's peacekeeper instead of its law enforcement. That all begins with us and the way that we imagine forward. it's a very difficult time, and it requires our imagination, both up to November and beyond. The Green Party has never been more needed than now. And if you don't believe that, I hope that you take it to heart. I'm ready to move forward in solidarity and in purpose. I am proud to be moving forward with you. Thank you.
That was Angela Walker, the Green Party's nominee for vice president, speaking on Saturday at the virtual Green Party National Convention. This was the acceptance speech of Howie Hawkins, the Green Party's presidential candidate, also at the virtual convention on Saturday. And we bring you as much of that speech as time will allow.
First of all, you know, I'm honored and humbled by the support given by the delegates, and I accept your nomination. And you just heard from Angela. You can see why I asked her to be my running mate. She's a great messenger for the Green Party. I've known her since 2014. We can work well together as a team. And what we are as a team is, I'm a retired Teamster. She's a truck driver. We got two workers for the White House. And we want to put a better class of people up in there than the grifters we got there right now. I want to second also the thanks that Angela gave to so many people in the Green Party, in our campaign, that brought us to this point. I just want to add one other person. That's the late Bruce Dixon, the former managing editor of Black Agenda Report. He was a friend of mine, and more than any other person, convinced me that I should take up and run this campaign. So we're drawing on his long experience and wisdom. In my campaign, we often say, what would Bruce do? And try to think how he'd deal with problems we face. And now I want to nominate you, the delegates of the Green Party, the members of the Green Party, the people out there thinking about supporting the Green Party, to be active participants in this campaign, because this won't work unless it's a mass movement. And that means everybody's got to play a part. Because as we've been saying, our country needs the Green Party now, because we're living in a failed state. It has failed us on these life or death issues, the COVID pandemic, the systemic racism. That means we are not yet a multiracial, a multicultural democracy. Growing economic inequality, that's a life or death issue for people on the bottom end of the income spectrum. The climate emergency and the new nuclear arms race. Like the Green Parties in Europe and many other countries, our country needs the Green Party in the legislatures and the executive branch and the judiciaries at the local, the state, and the federal level to provide real solutions to these problems. Because these two parties of the corporate state are failing us. The pandemic has exposed that for everybody to see. They're presiding over a failed state. With 4% of the world's population, we got a quarter of the world's COVID deaths. We got a quarter of a million people going to die from this pandemic by the election at the rate we're going. The president, Donald Trump, has given up. COVID won. Trump is a loser. We knew that. We've seen it. Now he's running around like Typhoid Mary, holding super spreader rallies without masks and social distancing, making his own staff and supporters sick. That is sick. Fortunately, he's collapsing in the polls. He's toast. He's a loser and good riddance. But I keep asking, where the hell is Joe Biden? When you think of Joe Biden, what policy is he the champion of? He lives within commuter distance of the White House press corps. He could be down there pounding away to that press corps that we need a test, trace, and quarantine program to suppress community spread of this killer virus. He could pound away on a single message. Instead, where is he? And while he's at it, he could be going and calling for universal mail-in ballot option for the election this fall so everybody can vote. These are not controversial ideological issues. We have plenty of policy differences with Biden and the Democrats, but these are common sense solutions to serious problems. This is what our country needs. Biden talks about new leadership, but where the hell is he? The silence of Biden and the whole political leadership of both parties on demanding an emergency federal response to deal with this pandemic makes them all complicit in the hundreds of thousands of deaths that are unnecessary that we're experiencing. We can't open the economy in the schools until we suppress the virus. We can't do it safely. So we need that program. And where is this two-party corporate state? They're failing us. And that's why the Green Party needs to step up. And in recent weeks, we've been out on the streets protesting the pandemic we've had in this country for generations, for centuries of racism. And we're calling for community control of the police because we cannot trust the police to police themselves. That's how they get away with murder and crime. We need police commissions that are selected by the people with the power to hire and fire the police chiefs, to get the racists and the sadists out of the forces, to oversee the policies and the budgets, and to investigate and discipline officers for misconduct, independent of internal affairs inside the police departments. We need to reimagine public safety. The homeless don't need a vagrancy charge from a cop. They need a home. A person with a mental health crisis doesn't need a clueless cop with a gun. They need mental health experts. And we have to end this war on drugs, which has led to mass incarceration. With 4% of the world's population, we got a quarter of the world's prisoners. It's the largest prison system in the history of the world. So we got to treat drug abuse as a health problem. We should legalize marijuana and decriminalize the hard drugs like Portugal did. Instead of going to prison for possessing hard drugs, you go, you get a ticket, you got to appear at a hearing with a doctor, a lawyer, and a social worker. And they figure out how to help you deal with your addiction or using the drugs to cope with an economic problem, whatever it is, they're there to help. So instead of just throwing people in prison and building the biggest prison industrial system in the world, which Joe Biden had a lot to do, he wrote the legislative architecture for that as chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, we should be treating drug addiction as a health problem, not a criminal problem. And going back to the police, the demand is defund the police. Yes, we need to move resources from police department into these kind of services I was just talking about. But there's not enough money in the police department's budgets. We got to defund the military. So we have the resources we need to invest in the jobs, the housing, the schools, the healthcare that are needed in Black and Indigenous and people of color communities that have been segregated, discriminated against, and exploited for generations, right up to the present day. We need reparations for African Americans. Black America lost half its wealth during the Obama administration. Reparations goes back to slavery, but the exploitation and theft of Black property continues. We need a reparations plan, and we support the bill for reparations in Congress that includes both individual reparations to close the racial wealth gap, so African-American households have more resources to lead a better life, but also collective reparations. Rebuild the Black land base in the South and Black economic, educational, and cultural institutions. And while we're talking about repairing damages, we need to honor the treaties with indigenous nations and with the Mexican-Americans under the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo. There is land that has been stolen by our government and by private interests in violation of those treaties. That should be return, and the social services the United States is obligated to provide under these treaties should be fully provided, which they have not. And then we got the broader issue that affects the whole working class of economic inequality. It's killing us. Working class life expectancies have been declining in recent years. The life expectancy gap between our richest and poorest counties is now 21 years. This is a moral shame on this country, which is so rich. So we're talking about enacting an economic bill of rights to end poverty and economic despair. These rights should include the right to a living wage job, an income above poverty, affordable housing, Medicare for all, lifelong tuition-free public education, and a secure retirement. We will enact the right to a living wage job through a WPA-style jobs program, with government providing jobs in public services and public works for anyone willing and able to work who can't find a living wage job in the private sector. And we'll create a floor of living wages in the private sector by raising the minimum wage rapidly to $20 an hour and indexing it to inflation and productivity so workers get the full value they contribute to the economy. We will enact the right to a guaranteed income above poverty. We'll build it into the progressive federal income tax. If your income is below the poverty line, the government will send you checks to bring you up and out of poverty. That's what Dr. King was demanding during the Poor People's Campaign of 1968. He said, I'm now convinced that the solution to poverty is to abolish it directly by a now widely discussed measure that guaranteed income. People make it sound like poverty is hard to decide. The problem for poor people, most of whom work hard, is that they don't have enough money. So we build it into the tax structure so nobody is below the poverty line. We will realize the right to affordable housing by building 25 million units of quality public housing in the next decade so everyone has access to an affordable home. We'll realize the right to quality health care for all by enacting Medicare for All National Health Insurance to pay for all medically necessary services for all Americans in the first year. And then over the next decade, we're going to build that out into a community-controlled national health service. So the hospitals and clinics are publicly owned. The doctors and other healthcare workers are salaried public employees instead of maximizing fees for service and creating a cost control problem and also a problem of not spending enough time with patients to provide the proper care. And it will be under democratic control through locally elected health boards that then federate at the state and national level for overall coordination and planning. We will provide tuition-free public education lifelong from childcare and pre-K through post-secondary college, trade schools, and continuing adult education. And we'll provide a secure retirement for all by doubling Social Security benefits so no senior is living below the poverty line. Another life and death issue is the climate emergency. This is not just about more heat waves and stronger storms. We're talking about mass extinctions, ecosystem collapse, and the collapse of agriculture. There are climate scientists now estimating if we go on a business as usual scenario, the capacity of agriculture to feed the human population we have right now will only be able to feed 10% of what we have now by the end of the century. Climate change is an existential crisis. And the Green Party's answer, our signature issue over the last decade, the Green New Deal. We've been campaigning for that since 2010, but the Democrats, of course, took the slogan, but what did they do? They diluted the content. The non-binding resolution for a Green New Deal introduced by Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Senator Ed Markey dropped our ban on fracking and new fossil fuel infrastructure. And Joe Biden this week basically committed to fracking the hell out of the country. If we don't stop fracking the new fossil fuel infrastructure, we'll be locked into decades more fossil fuel burning and the planet will be cooked. The non-binding resolution dropped deep cuts in military spending, which we want to help fund the Green New Deal. It dropped the phase out of dirty, dangerous, and uneconomical nuclear power. And it extended the deadline for zero emissions from 2030 to 2050. What happens when you give politicians a couple decades? They're gonna wait. And the climate science says we gotta do it in the next decade if we're gonna avoid the worst consequences. And so this non-binding resolution, Pelosi never let them vote on the House, and it went to the Senate, McConnell let them vote on it, and all the Democrats said it's a trick, and they voted present, except the four that voted with the Republicans, no. Anybody that thinks they're gonna get a Green New Deal from the Democrats is deluded. And now the House Democrats just came out with a proposal. They're gonna reduce carbon emissions. Their goal is 37% by 2030. That's not even what the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change proposed in their last report of 45%. And those reports are conservative because they gotta be approved by petro states like Saudi Arabia and Russia and the United States. But the Democrats aren't even attempting to reach that conservative goal. You know, the situation is Trump may call climate change a hoax, but the Democrats act as if it's a hoax. And the Green Party is here to advance the full strength Green New Deal. We want zero to negative greenhouse gas emissions and 100% clean energy by 2030. And we have an eco-socialist Green New Deal on our campaign website, howiehawkins.us, which you can study. And it provides for a 10-year, $27.5 trillion investment in public enterprise and planning, and particularly in the energy, transportation, and manufacturing sectors to get to zero emissions and 100% clean energy. Our plan will convert all the productive systems, not just power production, but transportation, manufacturing, agriculture, and buildings to clean energy and zero emissions by 2030.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.